The theme for this session is pricing and competition in the deposit market. It's a highly topical subject because we've been seeing some very strong competition in that area in the recent period. It's been referred to as a deposit war. To give one summary indicator, the average interest rate that banks have been offering on their term deposit specials recently have been around 6%, or about 100 basis points above the bill rate. A few years ago they were typically 50 basis points below the bill rate, so there's been a price movement there in relative terms of around 150 basis points in just a few years. That's a significant shift. To keep it in perspective though, we have to remember that this is not the whole market, it's just the part where competition has been most intense. Other deposit rates are not as high as that. Nevertheless, across the board, spreads between deposit rates and wholesale rates have generally shifted in the same direction over the last couple of years. Obviously, this is good news for depositors. It means that if you have funds to invest and you're prepared to shop around, now is a very good time to find a favourable rate. Of course, from the point of view of deposit takers and the people that they lend to, it mightn't seem particularly good news, because this is one of the factors that's been adding to the relative cost of funds and therefore also to the cost of lending. I've been asked to talk today about what's driving this competition in the deposit market and how things might develop from here. I'm going to stick to that brief, but I also want to place it in a broader context by looking at how competition has evolved over a longer period. So with this first slide, what I'm going to do is to take as a starting point a snapshot of the aggregate balance sheet of the banking system in 1980, which was just before the main sweep of financial deregulation got underway. Banks' balance sheets back then looked rather different from the way that they do now. Roughly speaking, the liability side of the balance sheet consisted of close to 90% deposits. On the asset side, loans were around 60% of the total, and much of the rest consisted of government securities which were held under the captive market arrangements that were then in place. In simplified terms, we can think of the bank's core business in that environment as being a mix of three main elements, namely deposit taking, lending, and transactional services. Banks' net interest margins were quite a bit wider than they are now. That was partly because their non-interest costs were higher, but in a more fundamental sense, it's also a reflection of the way that competition has evolved in the meantime. In the regulated environment, banks generally faced a situation of excess demand for their loans. As a result, competition within the banking sector wasn't very strong, and banks faced relatively weak pressure to contain costs. These conditions affected not just the intensity of competition, but also its focal point. In the regulated environment, competition within banking tended to take place at the whole of bank level, rather than at the level of the individual product. There was no point, for example, competing to offer lower lending rates when the market was in structural excess demand. Instead, the banks competed to offer their full mix of services on terms that would be attractive to customers as a package. So, for example, branch networks were extended to attract depositors, and there was an expectation that depositor loyalty would be rewarded with access to rationed finance. Typically, the pricing structure that this type of competition generated involved significant elements of cross-subsidy. In particular, the net interest margin tended to cross-subsidise transactional services and other activities like the maintenance of branch networks to a much greater extent than is the case today. This is the business model that used to be referred to only half-jokingly as 363 banking, which is borrow at 3%, lend at 6%, and be on the golf course by 3 o'clock. That was a joke that even back in 1980 I think was probably well past its use-by date, but I'm pleased to see that it's still got a laugh today. Obviously, I'll just turn that off for a moment. Obviously, a great deal has changed in the banking system since then. Banks have become much more diversified, both in their funding sources and in the range of businesses that they engage in. For the purpose of today's subject, though, the thing that I particularly want to focus on is the change in the way that banks compete. Post-deregulation, competition has been both more intense and it's been increasingly directed at the product level. That's been true both of competition between banks and also of the competition provided by more specialist institutions that targeted the bank's most profitable product lines. One early example of that on the deposit side was the introduction of cash management trusts, which came in as providers of what were effectively standalone deposit-taking services. The effect of that was to put upward pressure on deposit interest rates relative to wholesale rates, and in the process to give depositors a better deal. Specialist mortgage originators later did a similar thing on the lending side, compressing lending margins to the wholesale rate. Over time, these sorts of developments had the side effect of reducing the amount of net interest margin that was available to banks to cross-subsidise their other activities. In addition to all that, technological improvements like internet banking have contributed to the intensity of product-level competition by making it easier for customers to shop around on a product-by-product basis rather than just choosing a long-term relationship with a single bank. The results of all of this can be seen in some summary indicators of the banking sector's aggregate performance that I'll go through now. Let's start by looking at the relativities between deposit and loan rates and interest rates in the wholesale market. For much of the 1980s, the 90-day bill rate was actually higher than the average rate that banks charged on loans. That was a result of regulations that held lending rates much lower than they otherwise would have been in that environment. Of course, that didn't mean that borrowers, on average, were getting a favourable deal. It just meant that they were being rationed for funds and they may have had to go outside the regulated sector where interest rates were much higher. In the post-deregulation environment from the 1990s onwards, the whole interest rate structure was much lower because of the fall in inflation that occurred at that time. But wholesale rates fell significantly further than deposit and lending rates, and that's very clear from the chart that we're looking at now. The effect of that was to restore the structure to a more logical configuration where lending rates were usually above the wholesale rate and deposit rates below it. And all of that was happening alongside an overall compression in margins. Now, an important driver of the fall in banks' intermediation margins on the liability side of their balance sheets has been the declining share of deposits that were bearing either no interest or very low interest rates. That was partly a regulatory effect, since before 1984, banks were prohibited from paying interest on their current accounts. But it was also a consequence of stronger competition. We can see from this chart that in 1980, around a third of bank deposits were either in interest-free current accounts or in low-interest passbook accounts, which is what we define as those two things together being low-cost deposits for the purposes of this chart. 20 years later, that proportion was down from over 30% to around 5%. And not only did that proportion decline, but the relative benefit to banks from having a given low-cost deposit has come down substantially because the overall interest rate structure has come down at the same time. Another important development on the liability side, which I alluded to earlier, was that an increasing proportion of banks' funding was coming from wholesale sources. That was partly a consequence of the growth of the superannuation system as a recipient of household funds, which were then channeled back into bank securities, And it was also partly a result of the bank's diversification into offshore funding sources. But taking all of that together, we can see that a combination of structural factors, regulatory changes and increased competition has been working to narrow average margins on the deposit side, or on the liability side more generally, for quite some time. A similar thing was happening on the lending side after the initial reconfiguration of interest rates that occurred in the early 90s with the fall in inflation and deregulation. Competition over the subsequent decade put substantial downward pressure on lending rates relative to wholesale funding costs. As I said earlier, the impact of mortgage originators was a big part of the story. The result of all of this is that the major banks' net interest margins in the period since deregulation have been trending downwards. You can see here that they roughly halved from an average of around 4.5% in 1980 to a bit over 2% in the latest period. And notwithstanding the fact that they've ticked up recently, the average margin is still well below where it was a few years ago. To complete the story, the downward trend in net interest margins hasn't resulted in any structural decline in banks' overall profitability. In broad terms, that decline in the interest margin has been offset by two factors, namely reduced non-interest costs and increased non-interest income as banks have diversified their business models and reduced cross-subsidies. The net effect is that banks' combined income from all sources has been declining in relation to assets, but this has been broadly matched by a downward trend in the cost-to-asset ratio, which are the two lines that are being shown in this chart. Now, probably much of this is a familiar story, but my reason for going through it is to make the point that a trend towards increased competition in the deposit market and an increased relative cost of deposits is not something new. It's been an ongoing consequence of the way that market forces have evolved in the deregulated environment. Having made that point, it's also clear that the trend has been amplified by factors flowing specifically from the financial crisis. And I'm going to turn to that part of the story now. For some time, banks have tended to operate with a two-tier pricing structure on their term deposits, offering significantly higher than average rates at certain points on the maturity spectrum. Often these are at non-standard terms like 4 or 6, 7 months. These specials have been the part of the market where banks have competed most vigorously for price-sensitive customers. Now, this chart's showing the average rates in the upper line here on these term deposit specials. In the years just prior to the crisis, the pricing of these deposits was fairly stable. They were typically priced at about 50 basis points below the bill rate. But as I noted at the outset, that margin has now shifted up to about 100 basis points above on average. Another indication of more intense competition is that institutions have become more active in offering special rates at terms of longer than a year and often out to as much as 5 years. And they've also begun to offer higher rates in other parts of the market. Rates on non-special term deposits have tended to move up closer to the specials, and margins on at-call deposits have moved in the same direction, although by a lesser amount. And that's shown in the lower line in this chart. So clearly the intensity of competition has stepped up in the last 3 years or so. What's driving it? Well, it's really been a consequence of two factors associated broadly with the crisis and with the post-crisis environment. First of all, the crisis has focused the attention of investors, regulators, rating agencies, and not least the banks themselves, on the need for stable sources of funding. What constitutes stable funding is, of course, a good question. there's some tendency for analysis in this area to be overly simplistic, and in particular to assume that deposits are unambiguously more sticky than various forms of wholesale funding. That might not always be the case. Within short-term wholesale funding, for example, holdings of bank securities by domestic super funds are actually likely to be quite stable. And conversely, those types of deposits designed specifically to appeal to price-sensitive customers will be less stable than others. So it's important in analysing funding stability to focus on the specific characteristics of each instrument and not just to rely on broad summary measures like aggregate deposit ratios. That said, markets have clearly been taking a general view that banks should source more of their funding from deposits rather than from short-term wholesale liabilities. And there's no doubt that this has been a factor in market pricing in the post-crisis environment. It's also clear that prospective regulatory developments are going to put more pressure and more emphasis on stable deposit funding, although there are many details of this still to be worked out. The second factor in all this is that the crisis made non-deposit sources of funding more expensive, or in some cases more difficult for lending institutions to obtain than was previously the case. In this environment, it's to be expected that deposit rates will be bid up. One element of that, of the change in funding conditions, was the drying up of the market for residential mortgage-backed securities early in the crisis period, and that was a factor that disproportionately affected some of the smaller lenders and induced them to compete more vigorously for deposits as an alternative source of funding. Now, these factors are not unique to Australia. There are, however, some arguments that it may be more difficult for banks to attract deposit funding in Australia than is the case elsewhere, because a structurally higher share of Australian banks' funding comes from non-deposit sources, particularly from international markets and from domestic super funds. These funding patterns can be hard to change quickly, although we certainly shouldn't think of them as being immutable. But how far these Australia-specific factors might be adding to competitive pressure on deposit margins is hard to judge. It is notable, however, that significant shifts in deposit margins have been occurring in a number of other economies besides Australia. Although strictly comparable data in this area are hard to come by, term deposit margins in the UK, for example, look to have risen by more than those in Australia. In the euro area, average margins rose initially by a similar amount to what occurred in the UK, although they've since retraced some of that. So on the face of it, it seems likely that a good deal of the recent pressure on deposit margins has reflected common international forces and not just conditions specific to Australia. Let me conclude with a few more general remarks about what all of this means and how things might develop from here. My first remark is that we shouldn't talk as though competition in this market is a bad thing in itself. The point of financial deregulation was to deliver efficiency gains through increased competition. Among other things, this should mean a better deal for banks' customers. And the particular customer we've been talking about today is the depositor, someone who's often neglected in these sorts of discussions. As I said at the outset, if you're a depositor who is prepared to shop around, now is a very good time to find favourable rates. It's also important to put these things in a longer term context. The tendency for competition to put downward pressure on banks' net interest margins is not new. It's been going on for a couple of decades, to the benefit of both borrowers and depositors. Having said all that, there's a legitimate question as to how far the most recent step up in competitive pressure will prove to be sustainable. There do seem to have been some instances of anomalously high deposit rates being offered on occasion. It seems likely that over time banks and other deposit takers will get better at managing these more competitive conditions and avoiding paying rates that are unnecessarily high relative to the market. There are other reasons to think that the factors giving rise to the current wave of competitive pressure might prove to be partly transitory. In particular, conditions in alternative funding markets have been improving. A further recovery in securitisation markets, for example, would help lenders to diversify their funding sources and probably help to take some pressure off the deposit market. Similarly, any further narrowing of risk spreads in other wholesale funding markets would work in the same direction. Possibly reflecting some of these factors, there does seem to have been some easing in deposit margins just recently. On the other hand, we should expect the increased emphasis on stable funding sources to continue. It's also possible that the recent wave of competition has itself helped to make depositors more price sensitive. With the availability of special rates being more widely advertised, households may be learning to be more active and more sophisticated in seeking out the most favourable rates. If so, then we'd expect this to have an ongoing impact on the dynamics of the market. In a nutshell then, a good deal of what's happening in deposit markets is not new, but is actually a continuation of existing trends. Some of what is new might prove to be temporary, but some of it is likely to persist. To me, that sounds like an environment where competitive pressure in the deposit market is going to remain strong, even if some of the recent intensity has been somewhat overdone. Thanks very much for listening. Thank you, Chairman.
Katya Burr from the Australian Financial Review. What effect do you think that the government's tax concession on deposits will have on competition in the deposit market and the bank's funding task?
Well, I think the direction of the effect is clear, and that is that it will make it more attractive for the depositor to deposit funds with deposit-taking institutions. And so you would expect that to work in the direction of making it easier for deposit takers to attract funds. Given that the after-tax return is being boosted, that should take some of the pressure off deposit margins. That's a comment about the direction of the effect. I can't give you a quantitative estimate of that. But one of the points that I tried to make earlier is that it's quite difficult for price movements, and including the deposit price movements that I've been mainly talking about today, it's quite difficult for those things to generate rapid changes in the structure of banks' balance sheets, because some parts of the bank's balance sheets are quite sticky, and I think it takes time for the effect of these things to flow through. But the general point that I would make is that it's a measure that will make it more attractive for depositors, and therefore that should work in the direction of taking off some of these pressures that I've been talking about.
Kai Chow from the Sky News Business Channel. Earlier you said that bank profitability was still healthy because their costs fell as their margins did. At the moment, though, with their funding costs perhaps still looking to increase at the moment, Are the costs still falling, or could they now be facing that profitability squeeze?
Well, the main thing that's been compressing bank profitability in the last 2 or 3 years has been an increase in loan loss provisions, and we should think of that as being a temporary factor. The other longer term factors that I've been talking about, which is a gradual fall in non-interest costs, I don't see any reason why that trend would not continue. And then a third factor that's going on at the same time has been that the overall interest rate structure, particularly in wholesale markets, has tended to move upwards in the post-crisis period relative to official interest rates, particularly the cash rate. So those relativities have all shifted. But the big point that I was trying to make today was that the overall trend, if you look at it over a 20 or 30 year period, the overall trend has been a gradual compression of banks' net interest margins.